Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. This is an historic day in presidential politics. Former President Donald Trump found civilly liable of sexual abuse and defamation against writer E. Jean Carroll. Also, a deadly mall shooting over the weekend. The race for U.S. Senate heats up in Maryland, and the killing of Michael Jackson impersonator Jordan Neely. We're at the Reporters Roundtable discussing all of these stories. My guests are Misha Green, editor of the Washington Informer, political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist at Roll Call and host of the Equal Time podcast. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Thank you, everyone, for joining the conversation. Let's jump right into this. Sharice, were you surprised at the verdict today in the civil trial against former President Trump?
Absolutely not. I was not surprised. Because the civil liability, we as everyone understands, as most people understand, trying to find someone liable in a civil matter is far easier than trying to find someone guilty on the criminal side. And the fact that we had criminal charges, last month when it comes to Mr. Trump, I was not surprised that these civil charges were brought in, and that he's going to have to pay.
Mary, he's going to have to pay. You've got a $5 million judgment. Although he says that his attorney Joe Tacopina says that they will appeal, and certainly we kind of knew that was coming. But, Mary, what does this portend for Trump politically? We've seen that the polls, he gave him a jump after last month's indictment. Is this different?
I do think that Donald Trump has a certain base, a third of the Republican Party, or that will never leave him, or majority of the Republican Party and a certain amount of the electorate. But I do think that a lot of people are really getting sick of all the drama, all the charges surrounding him. And this was pretty intense. Let's face it, he didn't testify, but when you saw this deposition, he must give the worst depositions ever, because he came off really pretty much defending the Access Hollywood tape, saying, oh, yeah, for millions of years, people have been stars, have been able to get away with this. And they asked, are you a star? And he said, well, yeah. And then he attacked the lawyer and basically said, I wouldn't go for you. You're not my type. I mean, it was a horrible deposition in which he pretty much admitted that this is the kind of way he acts. And then, she had a pretty strong case. E. Jean Carroll, she withstood a tough cross-examination by a lawyer who was pretty much screaming at her at some points, why didn't you scream? Why? And so I think people were impressed by that. And she had so much testimony from friends she told contemporaneously, and also other people who said, well, Trump acts this way. But I do think politically it will, particularly among independents, are going to look at this guy and say, do we really want more of this? Because if he gets into office, you will get more of it. And we still have so many other cases, whether it's the prosecutor that is looking into the documents and his interfering in the election, or you have the Georgia case coming up. So more might be coming down the pike, and this will be accumulation of charges surrounding this man and his character. But I've been surprised that so many Americans are willing to look past all the things that he has done already.
Yeah, yeah. Misha, your thoughts about today's events in New York?
Well, I definitely want to start by saying that obviously there has been some justice for E. Jean Carroll, and so we celebrate that. in many ways, because of course people would like to see folks who are considered victims, right, of assault have a level of justice. And so in that way, kudos to the jury. However, in this success, in the celebration that some advocates are having, others are noting that Trump was not found guilty of raping Carol. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be very clear about this, that when we're looking at a base that is dangerously supportive of a criminal, that they're going to say, well, he didn't rape anybody, and find all of these. And excuse me, I like to give a trigger warning for that word for those listening in. But we're talking facts here. And so that when we consider the response from a base that doesn't really look at facts as sound, and then when facts seem to be in their favor, they will take it and run. Although I will say, Twitter has been really interesting in tracking the amount of Trump supporters who are finally seeing a light, if you will. And so one person, let's see if I don't want to get their name incorrect, but let's see. Mo Brooks, who famously appeared on stage at the January 6th Stop the Steal rally, tweeted, GOP cannot afford repeat sexual predator offender as 2024 presidential nominee. Offends voters badly. So, you know, Mo Brooks hopefully might get a base following him to say, well, maybe there needs to be a wake-up call here.
Well, you know, and I agree with that, because you know, it's one thing when you talk about the indictment and the alleged fabricating of business records for allegedly paying off a porn star. Okay. I get that, because of course even in that accusation with Stormy Daniels, it allegedly was consensual, according to her. Trump says, of course, it didn't happen. But the E. Jean Carroll thing, I think, is particularly troubling. Even though there's no DNA. There is no video security camera. This was pre-social media and all of the other things that are often compiled when you're talking about prosecution, civil or otherwise. But I think that whether it's independents and even some, you know, Republicans who are not staunch, they may be staunch Republicans, but not necessarily staunch Trump supporters, may be really, really troubled by this, particularly Sharice, after seeing that, you know, the deposition. I would argue that the video deposition and the former president's demeanor was not helpful to him.
Horrific.
Not only was it not helpful, it was erratic, it was ornery, and it was self-serving and arrogant, as we've seen him over and over and again. Look, what I would say is this. I think that this has a different political tone to it, and I think the reason it has a different political tone is the first indictment was seen as a political witch hunt, right? This indictment is not seen the same way. I agree that there's others coming down the pike, the one in Georgia as well, but those are going to be painted as political witch hunts in a way that this one is not. And I think your guest that talked about the deposition is that's the key. The deposition is the key that then unturns this lock of it just being a political witch hunt in which Democrats are coming after, or Democrats and independents are coming after Trump. Let's also remember, as she says, let's rewind all the way back to 2016. Trump did not overwhelmingly win the endorsement of his party. There was too many people in the field, and then after there was too many candidates in the field, it dwindled down really to Trump, and he really only had about one-third of his party support. So what we're seeing is that, now this is where I guess we're still kind of at the edge. I don't see another formidable Republican stepping up inside of this field that's going to make it harder for him to be able to garner the support or tear away at this support. Yeah, it hurts him politically, but until we see a strong challenger on the Republican side to him, it makes it even more difficult to really weigh how much this is going to hurt him politically.
Yeah. Mary, I'll let you have a final word before we move on to the next topic.
Well, I do agree with your guest that once, if Trump is elected or is nominated, make no mistake, the Republicans will line up behind him because that's what they do. But right now, you know, you saw former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. He doesn't really have a chance, but he has come out and basically said Trump's sexual abuse, his liability for that was indefensible. And we see, you know, Liz Cheney, of course, running ads against him. So I do think if they can find somebody to line up behind, Republicans would go to it. The problem is the person who was their great hope, Ron DeSantis, has kind of fizzled on the national stage, and he's picking fights with Disney and so forth. But it's a long time before they pick a nominee, and we'll see what happens if these indictments keep coming. And if you know, like we said, when Trump opens his mouth, really, how does he look? What does he do? And who does he offend? A lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I want to go now and talk about the U.S. Senate race in Maryland. Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks is expected to have a rally, her first live announcement, saying that, yeah, she is running for U.S. Senate. She did have the online announcement that the ubiquitous video announcement that everybody puts together with the music in the yes. background that's always just too loud because everybody's got music in the background. It's just David Trone's music, too loud. You know, Will Juwando's background music, too loud. You can, you know, and the same is the same. They need to talk to somebody about the editing, I swear. But
see, this is what the problem when you get broadcast journalists together.
Last week I was listening to Will Juwando, and I was, what did he say? Because you can't hear, you know, anyway, that's me. But, you know, let's talk about that, Misha, because this was not unexpected. We're hearing reporting that Ben Cardin a week or so ago basically, you know, told all the people that he knew in Maryland who might run, hey, guess what? I'm going to not run again.
Yeah.
And so, it is an open field. You know, David Trone, owner of Total Wine, multimillionaire. He financed his own campaign for Congress. You know, Will Juwando, a county council member. This is his, you know, his first term. Not, you know, not as well known statewide, but Angela Alsobrooks has some notoriety, and as often what people often say, as Prince George's County and Baltimore go, so goes the election.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting to see how fast people were ready to jump on this ticket. And I think that the excitement around these young, hungry politicians is very clear no matter what direction you're looking. I was at a gala on Wednesday where Will was there, and people were openly talking to Will about the mumbles about Alsobrooks then, and of course about David Trone, and you know, he was very excited, it seemed, you know, quite off the record, of course, we spoke, but he seemed very excited about the fact that this could be a very fun election cycle, and eager people ready to make a difference in Maryland. And so as a person who gets to watch because I have to.
Don't we and all?
And relay. I'm just, you know, I have my popcorn out and I'm ready. As you said, it'll be interesting to see how things go. Angela Also Brooks is well known. People like her. She has a good following in Prince George's County, and of course that makes a huge difference. One of our Prince George's reporter, Richard Elliott, brought up the fact that both Will and Angela were very early in showing their support for Governor Wes Moore. And so now the question is, well, will Wes Moore come out and support?
Yeah.
So, you know, I have my popcorn ready to go. That's where I'm at with it right now.
I'm going to ask my other guests what they think. Also, Barbara calling from Maryland. I'm going to ask what you think as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable discussing the top stories of the week. My guests are Misha Green, editor for The Washington Informer, political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist at Roll Call and host of the Equal Time podcast. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to my panelists, let me get to the phone lines. Barbara calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Barbara. What's on your mind?
I am a Germantown resident, Montgomery County resident, for the last 42 years.
Okay.
I will not vote for neither candidate from Montgomery County. And I am really disappointed in Will Geronimo.
It's Jawando, but go right ahead.
Jawando, I apologize.
That's all right.
I wish I was at that gallery or knew about that gallery. I would confront him as to why he was complacent with the former principal and not honoring any of the minority students who achieved honor roll or better. My grandson with 3.9 GPA was honored at the Washington Marriott for high school scholars, and he did not receive one. Or his former peers, high school honor certificate. And each time that he inquired about it, he was sent around and around and around. Geronimo.
It's Jawando, but let me say this. Let me say this, Barbara. You know, your reasons are your reasons, and you have one for Will Jawando, but you said the other one is Congressman David Trone. Why not David Trone?
David Trone came to Germantown, and he solicited our vote. But he has done nothing for Germantown. He moved his office from out of Rockville to Frederick, Maryland. What is he doing for us still? Nothing.
Okay, Barbara. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. So, you know, I think, as I said, your reason for voting or not voting for candidates are your own. You know, some people are you know, one topic candidates. Some of them are hyper specific. Some of them are very, very broad. But I will say, you know, Mary, that one of the things that may be in favor of Also Brooks over the other two known candidates right now is the fact that she is a black woman. There have only been two black senators, Carol Mosley Braun and, of course, Kamala Harris. Would you say that already gives her a leg up in this race?
Well, I think that cuts both ways in many ways. Yes, she has this prominent position, and folks know who she is. As Misha said, she's well-liked. She has a record to run on, even though, of course, there are controversies, as they always are when you have a record. And so, yes, and she has leaned into that and said, you know, there are not people who look like me, like my family, like my great-grandparents who had to leave because of racial issues and move to Maryland, and this would be a great reflection. That said, the fact that Maryland right now, blue state though it is, doesn't have any women in its congressional delegation is, and has, you know, and as you said, we've only had, what, Kamala Harris, Carol Mosley Braun. We haven't had a lot of folks, which also, it shows you the difficulty of running statewide for a black woman. And remember Donna Edwards when she left office to run to fill Barbara Mikulski's seat, that was unsuccessful as well. So I think it's something that will work in her favor for many folks. And for others, just to see a black woman in leadership is, you know, something that they would have to get used to. I'm not just, you know, so I think it does work both ways for her, and we'll see how it plays out. But it's going to be an incredibly competitive race with folks coming in, and we probably haven't seen the last of people jumping in, because to get that seat, you know, and run statewide if you are a Democrat in Maryland, yeah, well, that's pretty good once you win the primary.
I'd like you to drill down a little bit deeper on what you just said about getting used to seeing a black woman in leadership. Because Baltimore has had three black women mayors, like you said,
Carol, being a mayor and being the senator.
Well, she said leadership. I guess being a black man who is from here, I'm used to seeing black women in leadership. So maybe you're not talking about the Harold Fishers of the world.
Well, I'm in statewide office. This has been tough. I mean, look at what Stacey Abrams has gone through in Georgia to make that next step to be there. And let's face it, look at all the pushback that as vice president, former Senator Kamala Harris is getting. And we can talk about what's valid and what isn't, but she is getting a level of scrutiny as a black woman, a minority woman, that no male vice president has gotten. Let's face it, did you know really what Mike Pence was up to?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with that, because nobody checks the vice president.
Yeah.
Nobody's checking for the vice president.
Yeah, I'm just saying, yeah. when you have seen someone who will have to make history in that way, let's not underestimate the work she will have to do. And you'll have a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I'm all for her, but in the ballot, in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
What do they think?
Harold,
there's one thing that the elephant is in the room, or the elephant on the phone lines, is money, right? We haven't talked about how much money it costs to run these campaigns, and it doesn't, and that is where Trone has the upper hand. When you can self-finance, right? When you can make your campaign loan from yourself, is essentially what he's done to win inside of the Congress. That is going to be the difficulty for Ossoff Brooks and for Jawando, is the ability to then raise funds and to be able to which one of them is going to be able to then get the support from the Democratic National Committee at the national and the state level, because now you have these three candidates that are on the race, and some are going to be arguing for resources to be split up fairly when one of the candidates has the ability to bankroll himself and has more friends in the business community by being the owner of Total Wine to be able to attract more of those corporate donors. Let's also remember with the Citizens United case that has stood, the amount of money that you can raise is almost endless at this point. So to me, the question really becomes, who's viable of a candidate behind the money? Remember, we spent the runoff that we saw between Herschel Walker,
mm-hmm,
and Warnock.
Yes,
spent almost $1 billion, right? We're talking about the combined races of the race and then the runoff. So to me, the question is not the issues, it's the dollars.
Well, and I think to your point with Trone, he can argue that he's not beholden to anyone because he's using his own money. And you know, he's done it before. He can do it again. And as you said, being a gazillionaire, that and deciding to do it on your own could give the perception that he's not beholden to special interests, which is not to say that any of the other candidates are, but. Yes, I agree with you there.
Right, but Harold, very, very, very quickly, yes, he may not be beholden to anyone's interest, but many of the folks that are in Maryland, I have a lot of friends. I have a girlfriend who is on the city council in Bladensburg. Yeah, he may not be beholden to anybody's outside interest, but it seems like the state and his district right now is beholden to his, because the issues that he's consistently fighting are personal issues of his own, not necessarily the issues that his district is bringing to him. So while, yes, he's able to argue that, but it seems as if you go look at his record inside of the Congress, he is only concerned about some very personal issues that are affecting him and his family.
But do you think, with Maryland being as blue as it is, that the overarching issue would be to make sure that Maryland, holds that Senate seat remains blue, no matter who wins it, whether it's Trone, Jawando, also Brooks, Siegel, or any other person who may, even Jamie Raskin.
Are you asking me? I want to open it up for the your other.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Misha.
I think really what it boils down to is the fact that I can't see Maryland not being blue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over here also just thinking, Sharice, I'm gonna ask you later offline, but I just interviewed a Bladensburg council member yesterday about being a foster mother, and it was really, really great. But she talked about some of the issues that are needed. That she's fighting for specifically in her district, and some of that was investment in foster care, some of that was investment in mental health, and some of these issues that, again, to Sharice's point, maybe David Trone would not be, it's definitely mm-hmm. not championing right now, but I think at this point the issue is not whether or not Maryland will, the Senate seat will remain blue. It's who is going to be filling it.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Oh. Deborah calling from Capitol Heights. Deborah, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm calling about Alsobrooks running.
Sure, go ahead. I'm curious
as to why she doesn't want to finish the job she started as county executive. And also, whenever we have civic meetings in our community, she never show up.
Hmm.
So I'm curious as to, I don't want to get an email saying, oh, come and show up for my rally when you won't even bother to come to our civic association meeting.
Well, I couldn't really speak to the second point, but to your first point, she is limited by... She can only hold two terms.
Yeah.
Number
right.
one. Okay. So
term limits.
Thank you. Term limits. Good grief. And so when the campaign season, which you could argue has officially gotten underway, the election for the Senate seat will be, the general election for that Senate seat will be in November of 2024, as will the election of the next county executive in Prince George's County. And so, as a result, if she is going to do this, now would be the time. I mean, she couldn't just finish out her term and then run again. I mean, because that race is already run. But as far as her participation in other kinds of civic things, certainly that's not something, that I can, defend, criticize, or what have you. I mean, that's, again, that's your, like I said before, everyone has their reasons or no reasons. Mary, your thoughts about what Deborah is mentioning?
Well, yeah, as you said, everybody who is her constituents will have
stories to tell, interactions. And as I say, you know, everybody who's been in a position like that, they are going to be things that people like, agree with, don't agree with. So she'll be running on her record.
Deborah, thank you so much for calling. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk about two shootings that have made headlines, not only locally and, of course, nationally. You know, Sharice, we had this shooting just outside of Dallas over the weekend, 8 people killed. And then, of course, the shooter was also killed. I must admit, you know, when I first heard about it on Saturday and I was looking, you know, at some of the reports, I must admit, I had gotten to the point where I was saying, okay, well, here we go again, and isn't this just awful? But beyond that, this is just so obscenely familiar that I would argue that all of the officials who speak after this are reading from the script from the last mass shooting, or really not the last mass shooting, but the mass shooting before the last one.
Yep.
Or the ones before that one and the ones before that one. Sharice.
Exactly. So I'm at the point where I don't want your thoughts and prayers. I want some legislation. Right? If we're going to use the Bible as our starting point on why we are doing or aren't doing or whatever, we're at this place, I need some legislation. I'm at the point where I don't want any more thoughts and prayers. I want legislation. And this is the reason why. Texas, as it's also known, right? Not just Texas, but Texas, the place that you are allowed to open carry, right? You don't need any concealed gun permit. You don't even gun permit. You could just open carry. I can walk around Walmart with an AR-15. So what are we saying to the society in the state and across the country if that's acceptable? Let's also then, this is something I'm very passionate about, is this abuse of the use of the Second Amendment. That is absolutely ludicrous. The reason that the Second Amendment was placed inside of the Constitution was so that American citizens could then defend themselves against the British. The last time I checked, Great Britain is reducing in power, and we're increasing. So the British ain't coming here to fight anybody.
Well, they do
so
have a new king, by the way, but that's
enough. They do have a new king, and they do have a new king, and the side chick became the queen. So yeah. I understand that. However, there is no need for us to be at this place of pause talking about thoughts and prayers when we need legislation, when we are talking about a Second Amendment right that had nothing to do with the ability to walk into any public area and shoot it up.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in here for a bit,
sure,
too, to back that up, because this is Mary, and I guest hosted a Slate podcast, What Next, and I talked to a gun historian, basically, who studies all of this and says, you know, all these people that says this is the way it used to be. No, it wasn't.
No.
America has always had control, gun control. In the old days, people had rifles on farms and things. And when you would go into a Wild West town, you check your guns. They even had a law against carrying Bowie knives when people were stabbing people. So that's very ahistorical. And the thing about faith is, we all know, faith without works is nothing. So you can all say, you know, I'm praying, but, you know, as I believe that was Sharice was speaking, you have to have something behind it, some works. And now we are killing babies. This last time, this six-year-old is going to have to wake up from injuries and say, where's my mother, father, and three-year-old little brother?
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing this. And people talk about mental health. Well, first of all, Greg Abbott and these governors are cutting money for mental health treatment. And then every other country in the world has folks dealing with mental health issues, and they don't go around with these mass shootings. And when something happens, they just lock it down. And we see also so many of these people have these arsenals, and they have these right-wing fantasies, and they want to start race wars, as a man in Texas, one of those, that shooter was, and he went after, it looks like, many Asian Americans. There, and we are ignoring this. And in the meantime, we see, as we say, Greg Abbott, who has passed tweets saying, what's the matter with you Texans? California's beating us in the number of people who own guns. And then when a jury convicts somebody who is accused, found guilty of murdering a protester at a Black Lives Matter protest, Governor Abbott wants to pardon the person, okay, even though this person had a history of racist and discriminatory social media posts. This is insane. You are not safe anywhere, at the church, at the mall, at the synagogue. And, you know, I actually have a speaking engagement coming up at Michigan State where they had three people kill beautiful students. And I'm calling them first saying, what is your security protocol? This, we do need action here. But when you see little babies getting killed and people not wanting to do anything about it, it is difficult not to feel hopeless.
Yeah. Misha.
Well, you know, both of you all were so eloquent in what you'll say. I just want to add, you know, again, this is not new. And so, you know, to Mary's point that now young kids are being killed, again, this has actually been going on for years at this point of mass shootings where we're looking at youth as the people who we're mourning. And so it is terrifying as we continue to uplift young people in so many ways and say that they are our futures, that we're looking at them as being the victims of senseless gun violence and very, very poor legislative decisions and actions. On top of that, though, I really want to point out is that we're looking at some other things that I think need to be addressed as we're having these conversations, which is, first of all, this guy was a very open neo-Nazi. You know, I have friends who say, which we've talked about on this show before, like the N-word, right, on social media, and that gets flagged or they get in trouble for that. This guy who is tattooed with neo-Nazi tattoos on his body, and excuse me, signs on his body, as well as posting these things, not being tracked, not being flagged, not being stopped in so many ways, and then able, to Sharice's point, purchase several guns in the state of Texas, which has open carry laws. You know, we're not addressing issues that can be found with all of these, you know, what we are told. Intelligent cybersecurity people out there, why are we not stop seeing these things as tracks? I also just I have to say we got to look at addressing mental health in communities. This young, he's 33 years old,
mm-hmm.
And by no means am I having any level of sympathy or empathy with a truly a senseless murderer. But I got to say, we're looking at trends where particularly people around Mauricio's age are now open fire, going back to their places of employment, going back to their former schools, and have some of these same trends in their stories. Formerly served but got discharged, was bullied, already had proof that they were fans or endorsers of hate speech. And so we gotta, you know, address some of these issues that have been really key issues in our community for a number of years, and try, I think, to make a difference for this next generation.
Right. Well, so many people want to waste their time, our legislators, instead banning books.
Yeah.
Just think about that.
Exactly.
Guns can be out there, but oh no, please, let's not have a transgender person playing a sport.
Right.
This is what they're wasting their time on.
Precisely.
Well, let me...
Well, of course they're wasting their time on this is because the money that's... You know me, I'm ringing this money bell.
Yeah.
If I know, we're not just talking about the NRA. We love to talk about the NRA, but we're not just talking about the NRA. You have to think about gun manufacturers. You have to think about the lobbyists on top of that is pumping money. There's so much money being pumped into this cycle. Right. Remember after there was this threat that when Joe Biden became elected, he was going to take your gun. Gun sales skyrocketed. We weren't able to find ammo. You know, people weren't able to get even ammo for the guns that they did have. What we need to see right now is there is no reason for anybody in these United States to have an assault-style rifle. One of the biggest reasons we're seeing these mass shootings is because people do not have to stop and unload. They have magazines and clips that hold 50 to 100 rounds. There is no reason that anybody walking on the street needs that.
But Sheree, let me offer this as well. Let us say, for the sake of argument, that they can't touch the guns, and as the governor of Texas said on, I believe it was yesterday, he keeps talking about mental health, and you have all of these conservatives talking about mental health, and you even have some people who are more progressive talking about mental health. Okay. If that is the case, then let's start throwing some serious money at the problem of mental health. I mean, throwing serious money and some serious proposals. But the only problem I see with the mental health issue is that stigma still is an issue. And if you look at the case in Louisville, of the Louisville shooter, This bank employee was being treated. He was still able to get a gun. His parents said they had no indication as to why or that he would indeed cause anyone harm. And yet, that is exactly what happened. And unlike the gun issue, yes, money notwithstanding and everything else, not politically, but just operationally. Okay, you just stop making the assault rifles and selling them. Let's just say you just got rid of all of the assault rifles. That seems to be easier to do than getting people who may have mental health crises, who could be potentially dangerous, getting them the kind of treatment, even if you had unlimited funds. And I think that's, if this is going to be a mental health issue, then the mental health issue needs to be tackled, because obviously no one wants to touch the gun issue, as you just said, Sheree, whether it's the money, whether it's the NRA, whether it's the politics or anything. But nobody seems to want to do anything other than just talk about it.
Or pray.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or make the laws even looser.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And to that point, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about that, I just had an image of, because it's legal for me to have an assault style rifle in Texas, open carry. I just can't imagine that someone, would just walk into a Walmart with an assault style rifle and not have somebody call the police.
Well, that happened. Ohio.
Yeah, I know that's my point.
Do not hit black and white people the same.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's another thing. Yeah. That gentleman, I think it was John Crawford, was even testing out like a BB gun that Walmart sold. Somebody called somebody. The cops came, shot him right down, and then it was ruled, one of those things. Because I think that's something we all also have to talk about when we talk about the Second Amendment. We know it's really not for us.
Real quick, before we go, some thoughts on the Jordan Neely case. Real quick, Mary, we are still waiting for charges against the man who killed him. A lot of people say this is a complex case. I don't really see that as such.
Well, talking about mental health help, the system failed this person. As a child, as a teenager, I believe he witnessed his mother being beaten to death. And
right.
He was even, and she was strangled and he was strangled. What a sad story.
Mm.
And I have a friend who's a photographer in New York who remembers taking pictures of him as Michael Jackson impersonator, said he was quite nice. He had great interactions with him. And yes, the system failed, but it's the way we dehumanize the homeless. That's the latest thing with Fox Now. It's the homeless. It's their fault. The fact that there were people there who were right on with this person. And I just think what you had talked about before, that we're not serious about helping people who need help. I think this is incredibly sad. And I think maybe charges may be brought, but it would be hard-pressed the way a lot of New Yorkers are, and, hey, I'm there all the time, to get a jury that would convict this ex-Marine. Look, he was in the, you know, he's an ex-Marine. He's this, he's that. And what did we learn about Jordan Neely? That he had been arrested many times.
Yeah, right? The other thing I would say to that, even if they saw him as a danger, based on the video that we've seen,
exactly, Harold.
They didn't have to kill him.
No,
they didn't have to kill him.
14 minutes. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
and he did not touch anybody.
Yeah,
he had
not
put hands on anybody.
That's the thing.
Yeah, there's video proof.
The only person who put hands on somebody was that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we could talk about this more, but we will continue to watch this. Misha Green, Dr. Sharice Nelson, and Mary C. Curtis, thank you all for talking to us. I appreciate it, and we will keep our ears to the ground.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, May 9th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.